Chapter 6. Reporting the Results. Part 1. Spock arrived 7 minutes early to Dr. Dwega's lecture. He stood outside in a hallway with his back to a wall, providing him an excellent vantage point of both doors. He waited outside the entrance of the lecture hall for 1.43 minutes, before Cadet Kirk pushed through the main double doors, dressed smartly in a gray linen shirt and slacks. Spock watched silently as the others scanned the small crowd that had gathered. When the bright blue eyes found Spock, Kirk broke into a tight-lipped smile and walked directly towards him. "Hello, Spock," he said, almost tentatively. "It is pleasurable to see you again, James," Spock said, the man's name odd on his tongue. The other man smiled widely this time, seemingly more at ease. Spock was gratified to see that they had both opted out of Starfleet uniform, certain that they both wanted as little as possible to remind them of their current perceived imbalance of power. "It's just Jim," the man corrected. "James always sounds so serious." Spock considered reminding Jim that this was a serious event, and he did not initiate a romantic relationship lightly, but decided to set that aside for now. "Jim," he said, nodding, "shall we take our seats?" Spock led Jim into the lecture hall and was gratified to see that the most optimal seats for viewing were available. Jim stared at the empty first row and took a seat in the middle. Spock took the seat next to him. He could not help but notice that there was 27.84 centimeters between their knees and only 9.3 between their respective elbows. He could feel the heat radiating off the other man, as well as a Terran fragrance, laundry soap, and mint, all masking a more earthen, natural scent. Jim leaned over toward Spock, his mouth unnecessarily near Spock's ear. "Some of the professors are staring at us. I hope that isn't a problem for you." Spock looked over to Jim, meeting his eyes, and was able to detect the fascinating pigmentation of the iris against the lack of pigment in the stroma of the iris. "Is it?" Jim asked again. The light started to dim, and Spock broke eye contact. "No," Spock said finally. "Your opinion is the only one that is relevant in this matter." When a petite woman took the stage, Jim's elbow had moved 3.25 centimeters closer. Jim kept pace in the cool night air, arms swinging casually back and forth as they walked towards the small bistro Spock had selected for their dinner. His gait was relaxed, his head turned and attention centered mostly on Spock and not anything in their path, leaving Spock responsible for navigating them to their destination safely. Even in smaller vessels, it could be applicable. Some of those older ships have so many redundant systems. Reduce that and a runabout and suddenly you've got... Jim slapped his hands together and made a complicated gesture. It would be very efficient, Jim clarified, as they approached the door of Frontière de l'Infini. "Indeed," Spock said, holding the door open for his human date. Jim gave him a smile for the small gesture, and Spock was silently grateful his mother had taught him a few customs from her culture. The host led them to a quiet corner, and he allowed Jim to take his seat first. They ordered their drinks, and Spock answered irrelevant questions about his childhood and family. An appetizer arrived, and the conversation turned to courses Jim had taken. "And then he has the nerve to bring up some outdated postulate on transwarp theory? That probably predates Vulcan warp capability, if that gives you an idea of how out of line he was." So this other guy leans over and says in this really thick Scottish accent, "I have no idea where this guy came from. Can ye see we're not Beeren nor Quellian in this dimension?" Jim guffawed loudly at his own story. Spock nodded his acknowledgement of the subtle play on words, but ultimately puzzled by the humor of the anecdote. But it didn't seem to bother his human companion. Jim finally sobered when the waitress came to refill their drinks, and then the rest of dinner was continued in comfortable conversation. Spock was not naturally one for small talk, but, like Senek, and he was trying not to think of his young ward, he was aware of most humans' need to fill the moment with constant chatter. Jim occasionally asked a question or shared an anecdote, but also seemed equally content to sit in silence, a decidedly rare characteristic among many humans, and Spock was appreciative of this. "How are your crepes?" Jim asked halfway into their second course. "Nutritious and appropriately prepared," Spock replied, And your entree, is it adequate? Yes, it's delicious, he said, swallowing a bite. Do you have a favorite food, or is taste unimportant to Vulcans? We have preferences. It is logical that sensory pleasure is one of many measurable factors that would determine preference. For example, I prefer Terran mushrooms to the native edible fungus of Vulcan, and took another bite of the mushroom and tomato crepe. What about in people? Do you have a preference in sentient life forms? Spock chewed, considering the question, realizing that Jim perhaps was asking a question of a more relevant and personal nature. I prefer intelligence and integrity over any genetic composition, Spock said. He also suspected he had a preference for the yellow coloring of Jim's hair, but didn't feel it was appropriate to voice it just then. Jim looked like he was about to respond when the waitress bustled up to the table. Would you care for dessert? Our specialty is flourless chocolate cake. I will take black coffee, Spock said. I can't say no to chocolate cake, Jim said. She nodded and left their table. Jim suddenly frowned when she left the room. She's been staring at you, like she's evaluating your facial expressions, he muttered. I did not notice. It's weird. Like that look your cousin gets when I'm doing something new and he has to document it. Then Jim shrugged, and the subject was dropped. The waitress came back and set the coffee and a large slice of rich chocolate cake on the table. Jim licked his lips. It's got raspberries and whipped cream, Jim sighed, grabbing the fork, and immediately took a bite and groaned. Oh, this is amazing. Want to try a bite? Spock stared at the offered bit of chocolate cake on the fork. The sharing of utensils was incredibly intimate and somewhat taboo in Vulcan culture. Spock was only half aware of his actions until his hand closed over the fork, brushing against Jim's. He closed his mouth over the fork, able to detect the cocoa, the freshness of the eggs used, the metal of the fork, and a taste of something that surely must be Jim. The realization was titillating. Do you think it's good? Jim asked, hand still on the fork. The barest of contact between Spock's ring finger and Jim's index sent him Jim's muted wave of interest. Spock swallowed, unsure of how to categorize the experience, but nodded and released the fork. Another bite? Jim asked, a smile blooming on his face. I should not indulge, Spock said. Processed sugar has a negative impact on my physiology, much like ethyl alcohol is to human physiology. Jim nodded, then widened his eyes in comprehension. So when I was offering my soda to Senek when we first met at that restaurant by the library, it could have gotten him drunk? Spock nodded. Now I see where you thought I was involved in the delinquency of a minor. Spock shook his head. Senek is entirely too inquisitive for his own good. As he matures, he'll find a balance to his curiosity and good prudence. Spock paused, considering. I have since changed my opinion of your character considerably. I may have to thank Senek for it. Spock was rewarded with a chuckle. Jim finished the rest of his cake, a few appreciative groans that were probably entirely unnecessary, and the pair stood to leave. I will escort you to your dormitory, Spock said, swiping a credit chip over their table. Jim merely smiled and nodded. During their walk, Spock calculated that Jim walked between 4 to 6 centimeters closer on the way to his dormitory than when they walked to the restaurant. Jim hummed a little in the companionable silence as he led Spock down a familiar path to one of the dormitories. Well, this is me, Jim said, stopping at the door, rocking on the balls of his feet. I had a good time tonight. I have had an enjoyable evening in your company as well. I will call you tomorrow if you would like assistance on your exochemistry project, Spock promised. That sounds great. Well, Jim rocked again, an intent look on his face. Spock now recognized the expression that Jim was referring to in the restaurant. Jim was studying him, trying to find something. Jim must have found it, as he gave a short sigh and smiled. Good night, Spock. Good night, Jim, Spock murmured, and remained on the sidewalk and watched the man enter his building. From his vantage point in the shadows, he could see Jim's wide grin as he walked past a window and up the stairs to his room. Several days later, Her sensuous curves quivered under her skilled and rugged hands. "Captain," he husked out. He was the yeoman. His attention to detail was paramount to pleasing the logical captain of his illogical heart and soul. His Vulcan captain smiled as his fingers dipped deeper. Her moist passion spilled out onto the captain's chair and... Spock abruptly set Senek's pad down. He was unsure of what he objected to more. The moist passion, or the smiling Vulcan. Was this what humans expected from Vulcan lovers? Was this what Jim expected? He thought on that for a while, all the way to the holoplex, where Jim was waiting, popcorn and drinks ready. Jim was insistent that helping him study for exochemistry was not a date, and neither were their frequent but brief calms over the past week. He claimed it was a traditional human dating ritual. So for the first time, Spock found himself led down a dim hall through the throng of hollow movie patrons. This was a Terran masterpiece from centuries ago. It's been remastered so many times, no one is quite sure what the original was like, and I've never seen it in 5D with the extended director's cut, Jim said as they took their seats in the half-filled room. He handed Spock not one, but two drinks. Didn't know what you'd like, so I brought choices. Spock inspected the unsweetened chai and took a tentative sip. Thank you. Jim grinned and sat back in his seat, opening boxes of candy. I know you say you don't normally indulge, but I figure it's Saturday and you might want to try some human candy. Spock wondered why the Terran designation of this particular day on the standard calendar would influence his behavior, but took an offered piece from the purple box and sampled. Spock must have given some unknown facial expression, because Jim had to smother a rueful grin. I take it that you aren't a fan of raisins. Spock shook his head and swallowed the offending raisinette. Before he could object, Jim held out a handful of different chocolate-covered candies. Try these instead. I have a good feeling about it. Spock took one, fingertips brushing against Jim's palm, a spark of interest. Jim flushed slightly in the dim light of the hollow theater. Spock chewed tentatively, more interested in Jim's pigment change. What did it feel like to Jim when their hands met? Was Jim aware of what the gesture might mean to a Vulcan? The mint flavoring is quite enjoyable, Spock reported. Jim smiled triumphantly and handed Spock the box. When the movie had concluded, the triumphant heroes rewarded by the princess, Jim's finger was tracing the top of Spock's hand, and Spock had eaten an entire box of mint-flavored candy. The villain is still alive, Spock pointed out as the lights came on and they walked to the exit. And they have only succeeded in winning a minor battle against a rather well-supplied military regime. There's a sequel, Jim explained. Actually, 9 sequels. 3 prequels, but we won't talk about those. Spock could only nod. I'd look forward to seeing the next one. Jim gave Spock a half-grin. You just used a contraction. Spock paused and thought back on his previous words. Yes. I have eaten the entire box of these junior mints, and my cognition and fine motor skills are mildly impaired. In confirmation of that statement, Spock attempted to place his empty candy container in the recycler near the door and needed 2 tries to succeed. Jim's eyebrows shot up. You're a lightweight. I am uncertain what you mean by that. It means I'm taking you home, Jim said. Can you walk? Spock frowned, and then was belatedly surprised that he had made the expression. My gross motor skills are mostly intact. I am able to see myself safely home, Jim. Jim shook his head. I wouldn't feel right. Anyway, you said yourself that your cognition is impaired, so I'm making this decision in the interests of safety. I'll drive you home. As he couldn't argue with the logic of that decision, Spock followed Jim out of the crowded holoplex to the parking garage, where Jim stopped in front of a motorbike. Spock balked at the 2-wheel contraption. I do not see how this option is safer. Jim smiled and handed Spock a helmet. I've never been in an accident. I promise to be extra careful. Spock frowned again. One should take the most amount of care when operating any vehicle, especially one with substandard safety features. Jim chuckled as he strapped his own helmet on, and then reached up to help Spock thread the straps of his own. Jim's face was close. He could smell a faint whiff of salted popcorn on his breath. Spock felt a sudden urge to find out what it tasted like on Jim. "All set," Jim murmured, looking up at Spock with a small grin. He turned and swung a leg around the bike. "Jump on, and put your arms around me." Spock took his seat and threaded his arms around Jim and held on as the lights of Sausalito sped past in his peripheral vision. It was a most dizzying sensation. When they arrived on the quiet street of Spock's home, he stood and tried to disengage the complicated harness system of the helmet. Before he realized, Jim's fingers were at his chin, batting away Spock's clumsy hands.
"Remind me, no candy on the next date, or you'll never go out with me again," Jim muttered, untangling the straps.
"Unlikely," Spock said. "I wish to continue our courtship." "Is that what we're doing by Vulcan standards?"
"Courting,"
Jim asked. The straps unfastened, and Jim, gently, ran his fingertips against jaw and neck for a scant moment, and then they were back at the man's sides. Spock stood, staring at Jim, helmet still on his head.
"It is what we wish to make it," Spock replied seriously. "My interest in you has only increased in intensity."
Jim smiled ruefully.
"You don't see the point in playing around, do you?"
Spock tilted his head, confused.
Jim just shook his head.
"I always know where I stand with you. It's refreshing, that's all. A good thing." Jim reached up as if to touch Spock's face, but merely lifted the helmet off his head.
"I feel the same, by the way."
Jim escorted Spock to his door, unsurprised that Senek was watchfully waiting from the window, and bid them both good night. Senek peered thoughtfully at Spock, standing in the middle of the communal room with no purpose. Spock looked back at him. "Unless you require anything, I must retire for the evening." Without waiting for a reply, Spock turned and retreated to his room, and read through two chapters of The Vulcan Captain and the Virgin Yeoman with disgust and disbelief, before he was overcome by the processed sugar in his system and fell asleep. The next morning, Spock awoke at 0517, 17 minutes later than was typical. He was otherwise completely refreshed. However, he spent 17 fewer minutes meditating, which should not have had a significant impact on his day. Nevertheless, he found himself mentally occupied by thoughts of Cadet Kirk all morning. The blonde, blue-eyed male was illogical and irrational, and very, very human. He was intelligent, inquisitive, and had a certain indefinable quality that drew Spock in and held him. More than simple charisma, he was magnetism personified. James T. Kirk was, quite possibly, everything a Vulcan mate was not. As Spock endeavored to be honest with himself, all of this made Jim all the more attractive. As if summoned by thought itself, Jim appeared at his elbow in the hallway.
"Commander, do you have a moment?"
"I have a meeting with Captain Pike in 22 minutes, Spock said, tucking his hands behind his back.
"I can talk fast. I have to get to work soon anyway," Jim insisted.
Spock nodded.
"I got a message from Captain Chow this morning," Jim said, rubbing his hands together nervously. "I'm to report to her CO tomorrow for a preliminary meeting."
"Do you know what this means?"
Spock blinked, making the mental connection. Captain Cho of the USS Shenandoah wanted Cadet Kirk, who was mere months away from graduating with honors, to meet with her first officer before official commissions were granted. There was only one conclusion to draw.
"I wanted to know what you thought I should do," Jim asked, his voice low. "I mean, the Shenandoah is a great ship, but..."
But it was not the Enterprise, Spock thought. It was slated for short-range missions in the Alpha Quadrant, while the Enterprise's 5-year mission was headed for deep exploration of the Beta Quadrant. Jim may spend his entire commission never to cross paths with the Enterprise. The Shenandoah would be an excellent opportunity for any cadet
looking to obtain a variety of experience, Spock said slowly. After the 2-year commission, an ensign might be promoted to lieutenant. Jim stared at Spock's sleeve for a moment, then steeled his jaw and met Spock's eyes. What if I'm looking for a bigger commitment? Jim asked. Spock wondered at the possible double meaning, wondered if it was just hopeful on his part so soon. He looked away, contemplating his response, when his eyes landed on an Andorian leaning over the small thin frame of a familiar figure, holding a pad above his head. Senek. Spock started to walk, then run, when the Andorian's fist was pulled back. Spock sprinted down the corridor just in time to misdirect the arm and propel the man's fist into the wall inches away from Senek's head. The Andorian cried out in pain, holding his fist, and Senek darted out of the way as Spock grabbed the aggressor by the arm. What the hell? Jim asked, 2 steps behind Spock. No one responded. A pair of cadets further down the hall were talking in their communicators, probably alerting security. Senek, are you unharmed? Spock queried. Senek nodded, and the Andorian struggled futilely in Spock's grasp. He's just a kid, Skarel, Jim said, his voice appalled. What is your problem with him? The Andorian's antennae quivered and raised as Jim addressed him, but Skarel did not answer. Spock watched, wary of the Andorian's behavior towards Jim. Senek leaned down to pick up the discarded pad. May I be excused? Yes, Cadet Kirk, you are dismissed. We will resume our discussion at a later point. Jim looked about to protest, but nodded and turned to leave. Spock turned his attention to the Andorian in his custody, who was eyeing Jim hungrily. As soon as Jim was out of eyesight, Spock turned to the Andorian, unsurprised to see the man's teeth bared in territorial defiance. You are not to speak, engage, or interact in any manner with either Vulcan boy Senek or Cadet Kirk, Spock commanded softly. Is that understood? Although there were no witnesses, any security staff would report Cadet Skarel's response to Commander Spock necessitated the administration of defensive neutralization, although never mentioned in the incident report. Perhaps it was a little overzealous.